Chapter 2. There is satisfactory evidence that many, professing to be original witnesses of the Christian miracles, passed their lives in labors, dangers, and sufferings, voluntarily undergone in attestation of the accounts which they delivered, and solely in consequence of their belief of those accounts, and that they also submitted from the same motives to new rules of conduct. After thus considering what was likely to happen, we are next to inquire how the transaction is represented in the several accounts that have come down to us. And this inquiry is properly preceded by the other, forasmuch as the reception of these accounts may depend in part on the credibility of what they contain. The obscure and distant view of Christianity, which some of the heathen writers of that age had gained, and which a few passages in their remaining works incidentally discover to us, offers itself to our notice in the first place, because, so far as this evidence goes, it is the concession of adversaries. The source from which it is drawn is unsuspected. Under this head, a quotation from Tacitus, well known to every scholar, must be inserted as deserving particular attention. The reader will bear in mind that this passage was written about 70 years after Christ's death, and that it relates to transactions which took place about 30 years after that event. Speaking of the fire which happened at Rome in the time of Nero, and of the suspicions which were entertained that the emperor himself was concerned in causing it, the historian proceeds in his narrative and observations thus. But neither these exertions, nor his largesses to the people, nor his offerings to the gods, did away the infamous imputation under which Nero lay, of having ordered the city to be set on fire. To put an end, therefore, to this report, he laid the guilt and inflicted the most cruel punishments upon a set of people who were holden in abhorrence for their crimes and called by the vulgar Christians. The founder of that name was Christ, who suffered death in the reign of Tiberius, under his procurator, Pontius Pilate. This pernicious superstition, thus checked for a while, broke out again, and spread not only over Judea, where the evil originated, but through Rome also, whither everything bad upon the earth finds its way and is practiced. Some who confessed their sect were first seized, and afterwards, by their information, a vast multitude were apprehended, who were convicted, not so much of the crime of burning Rome, as of hatred to mankind. Their sufferings at their execution were aggravated by insult and mockery, for some were disguised in the skins of wild beasts and worried to death by dogs, some were crucified, and others were wrapped in pitch shirts and set on fire when the day closed, that they might serve as lights to illuminate the night. Nero lent his own gardens for these executions, and exhibited at the same time a mock Circensian entertainment, being a spectator of the whole, in the dress of a charioteer, sometimes mingling with the crowd on foot, and sometimes viewing the spectacle from his car. This conduct made the sufferers pitied, and though they were criminals and deserving the severest punishments, yet they were considered as sacrificed, not so much out of a regard to the public good, as to gratify the cruelty of one man. This is rather a paraphrase, but is justified by what the scholiast upon Juvenal says. Nero maleficos homines taida et papyro et cera supervestibat, et sic ad ignem admoveri jubebat. Lard, Jewish and Heath. Test, Volume 1, page 39. Our concern with this passage at present is only so far as it affords a presumption in support of the proposition which we maintain concerning the activity and sufferings of the first teachers of Christianity. Now, considered in this view, it proves three things. First, that the founder of the institution was put to death. Secondly, that in the same country in which he was put to death, the religion, after a short check, broke out again and spread. Thirdly, that it so spread as that within 34 years from the author's death, a very great number of Christians, ingens eorum multitudo, were found at Rome. From which fact, the two following inferences may be fairly drawn. First, that if, in the space of 34 years from its commencement, the religion had spread throughout Judea, had extended itself to Rome, and there had numbered a great multitude of converts, the original teachers and missionaries of the institution could not have been idle. Secondly, that when the author of the undertaking was put to death as a malefactor for his attempt, the endeavors of his followers to establish his religion in the same country, amongst the same people, and in the same age, could not but be attended with danger. Suetonius, a writer contemporary with Tacitus, describing the transactions of the same reign, uses these words, Affecti supplicis, Christiani Janus hominum, superstitionis, novae et maleficae. Sueti, Nero. Chapter 1. The Christians, a set of men of a new and mischievous or magical superstition, were punished. Since it is not mentioned here that the burning of the city was the pretense of the punishment of the Christians, or that they were the Christians of Rome who alone suffered, it is probable that Suetonius refers to some more general persecution than the short and occasional one which Tacitus describes. Juvenal, a writer of the same age with the two former, and intending, it should seem, to commemorate the cruelties exercised under Nero's government, has the following lines. Sat Icar version 15. Pon tigellinum, taeda lucibis in illa, quaestans ardant, qui fixo gutture fumant, et latum media sulcum deducit arena, forsen deducis. Describe Tigellinus, a creature of Nero, and you shall suffer the same punishment with those who stand burning in their own flame and smoke, their head being held up by a stake fixed to their chin till they make a long stream of blood and melted sulfur on the ground. If this passage were considered by itself, the subject of allusion might be doubtful. But, when connected with the testimony of Suetonius as to the actual punishment of the Christians by Nero, and with the account given by Tacitus of the species of punishment which they were made to undergo, I think it sufficiently probable that these were the executions to which the poet refers. These things, as has already been observed, took place within 31 years after Christ's death, that is, according to the course of nature, in the lifetime, probably, of some of the apostles, and certainly in the lifetime of those who were converted by the apostles, or who were converted in their time. If then the founder of the religion was put to death in the execution of his design, if the first race of converts to the religion, many of them suffered the greatest extremities for their profession, it is hardly credible that those who came between the two, who were companions of the author of the institution during his life, and the teachers and propagators of the institution after his death, could go about their undertaking with ease and safety. The testimony of the younger Pliny belongs to a later period, for, although he was contemporary with Tacitus and Suetonius, yet his account does not, like theirs, go back to the transactions of Nero's reign, but is confined to the affairs of his own time. His celebrated letter to Trajan was written about 70 years after Christ's death, and the information to be drawn from it, so far as it is connected with our argument, relates principally to two points. First, to the number of Christians in Bithynia and Pontus, which was so considerable as to induce the governor of these provinces to speak of them in the following terms. Multi omnis etatis utriusque sexus etiam, neco enim civitates tantum sed vicos etiam et agros, superstitionis istius contagio pervagata est. There are many of every age and of both sexes, nor has the contagion of this superstition seized cities only, but smaller towns also in the open country. Great exertions must have been used by the preachers of Christianity to produce this state of things within this time. Secondly, to a point which has been already noticed, and which I think of importance to be observed, namely, the sufferings to which Christians were exposed, without any public persecution being denounced against them by sovereign authority. For, from Pliny's doubt how he was to act, his silence concerning any subsisting law on the subject, his requesting the emperor's rescript, and the emperor, agreeably to his request, propounding a rule for his direction without reference to any prior rule, it may be inferred that there was, at that time, no public edict in force against the Christians. Yet, from this same epistle of Pliny, it appears that accusations, trials, and examinations were, and had been, going on against them in the provinces over which he presided, that schedules were delivered by anonymous informers containing the names of persons who were suspected of holding or of favoring the religion, that in consequence of these informations, many had been apprehended, of whom some boldly avowed their profession and died in the cause, Others denied that they were Christians. Others, acknowledging that they had once been Christians, declared that they had long ceased to be such. All which demonstrates that the profession of Christianity was at that time, in that country at least, attended with fear and danger. And yet this took place without any edict from the Roman sovereign, commanding or authorizing the persecution of Christians. This observation is further confirmed by a rescript of Adrian to Minucius Fundanus, the proconsul of Asia, Lard, Heath, Test, Volume 2. Page 10, from which rescript it appears that the custom of the people of Asia was to proceed against the Christians with tumult and uproar. This disorderly practice, I say, is recognized in the edict, because the emperor enjoins that for the future, if the Christians were guilty, they should be legally brought to trial and not be pursued by importunity and clamor. Martial wrote a few years before the younger Pliny, and, as his manner was, made the suffering of the Christians the subject of his ridicule. In matutina nu perspecta tu serena mucius, imposuit qui sua membra fucis, si patiens fortisque tibi durusque videtur, abderitanae pectora plebis habes, nam cum dicatur, tunica presente molesta, urep manum, plus est dicere, non faciu, forsan ture manum. Nothing, however, could show the notoriety of the fact with more certainty than this does. Martial's testimony, as well indeed as Pliny's, goes also to another point, viz., that the deaths of these men were martyrdom in the strictest sense, that is to say, were so voluntary that it was in their power, at the time of pronouncing the sentence, to have averted the execution by consenting to join in heathen sacrifices. The constancy, and by consequence the sufferings, of the Christians of this period is also referred to by Epictetus, who imputes their intrepidity to madness or to a kind of fashion or habit, and about 50 years afterwards by Marcus Aurelius, who ascribes it to obstinacy. Is it possible, Epictetus asks, that a man may arrive at this temper and become indifferent to those things from madness or from habit as the Galileans? Let this preparation of the mind to die arise from its own judgment and not from obstinacy like the Christians. Epict Enarchon of Barsi 7, Mark or Med 1 AC 3.